more information actually makes you think you're broken. It's like going to the doctor and getting a diagnosis for something, but not actually having a treatment plan.
Especially if you are like a personal development junkie, you're like searching the internet, every book, every podcast, like how can I diagnose myself?
You're like, I'm not getting it. Something's not clicking, but I've read all these books, but I've been to their retreat 3 times. And it's because when you finish, there's nowhere to land. One woman came up and she asked if I could make her a custom t-shirt that said biracial and worthy as fuck. And I was like, fuck yeah, girl, I'm making that shirt right now. And I sent it to her.
As women especially, like there's so many age programs and worth programs and ethnicity programs and what's beautiful and all these things. So it's like, yes, we're all unique and we have our own stories, but we're all being subjected to those stories.
Yep. I feel like as soon as you start defending or regretting or resenting parts of your story, they're really in the driver's seat.
Welcome to the Fully Expressed podcast.
We're your hosts, Karenna
and Samantha.
And this is a show where we're inviting you into your fullest expression in life, love, and business.
Enjoy. Hey guys, on today's episode, we have Liz Owens. She is a certified coach and founder of House of Worthship, a community for women who were once called precocious as kids and are now overperforming adults living between two worlds, one that looks right on the outside and one that's clawing to get out from the inside.
What's really cool about this episode is that we really dive deep into what does it look like to fully embrace and feel what is it to be worthy AF. I know that ultimately we all want to feel worthy AF, but what does it look like to actually put that into practice, not just become more self-aware of all of our shit, but actually move into feeling that way?
She gives you practical tools and some great advice on how to start becoming worthy AF. We can't wait for you to listen.
Enjoy. Hi, Liz.
Hi.
How are you? I'm so happy to be here today.
Me too.
I know.
In our new space.
Very cool space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you drove all the way from LA.
I did. It was just taxing beyond. No, it was really quite easy this morning. It was a perfect morning to do this.
When it's a breeze, it's the best breeze. You're like, wow, this is not bad.
I know. And then you convince yourself that you can do it all the time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Why not?
Especially with LA traffic.
Exactly. Ugh. The fool's game.
This is what podcasts were created for, though. The commute, you know, like that's what got me through when I lived in LA was podcasts.
True. You're right. If you're listening to a podcast on the way to record a podcast, really, it's just
better.
It's the circle doing its job.
It's so true. So you created and founded House of Worthship, which you said was for women who were called precocious as children, which I love that word. And and helping them like step into their fullness, their fullest expression, which is so in line with what we talk about. So tell us more, like how did that come about? Give us the backstory.
Oh, well, we'll need definitely more than a car ride from LA for this, but I'll try and keep it short. House of Worthship was created out of my original brand called Worthy AF Apparel. And I started that when I was just outside of DIYing my wedding with my husband. And I had gone through and designed everything and I was feeling very creative and creating some t-shirts for my girlfriends and me. And most of us are born and raised in LA. And already that kind of led us into living a more unconventional life. We were very, very blessed to be born there. Our parents were all very open to us living whatever we needed to, but we all kind of felt this need to almost fake our love for the life we were in, right? We were all living a little bit outside the traditional box. Mm-hmm. And so I started to create some verbiage on the t-shirts that was a little more fun and funky and witty and out there, you know, unconventional and unapologetic and, you know, child-free, no kids, no regrets, worthy as fuck, all that kind of stuff where I'm like, none of us were really living that normal traditional life.
Yeah.
And as I was working as a vendor, as a product business owner, I was starting to meet the women that were buying things and hearing their stories and getting personal with them. And I realized that I wanted to be their cheerleader. I wanted to help them build the mindset to want to wear something that made them so incredibly proud of their story, of the things they'd experienced. And in that moment, I started to really shift into what my purpose has been, and House of Worthship has kind of been the the product of that. And my story from as I was reliving my journey on how I got there, it all started to make sense. When really, if you were looking at my story, it had no through line until that moment.
So what were some of the stories that you were hearing from these women when you were getting like in conversation with them? Like, what were they sharing with you?
Oh, man. I remember being at a speaking event with a girlfriend of mine who I actually met on a boat in Mexico. And for my bachelorette party, and we were like partying and getting drunk. And she's telling me about her experience as a licensed therapist and all the work she was doing. And she was planning events and doing all these things. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm doing this, you know, t-shirt business and we should collab. And months later, we get into a room together. And I did a little bit of speaking. And then afterward, I was I brought everyone over and I said, look, you know, your story is worth being proud of. If there's something in your life that you've been ashamed of or embarrassed of, use that as something to reframe and create your worth from that place. Don't let it run you. It can define you without actually controlling who you are. And it should. And one woman came up afterward and she asked if she could, if I could make her a custom t-shirt that said biracial and worthy as fuck. And it was just a moment where I sat back and I said, God, like there's so much that first of all of us can be grateful for, but I sat there and I'm looking at this beautiful, successful woman who had this, like she was born in a body she had no control over. Right. And that was part of a story that she walked into a room with and felt shame. And she said, I don't want to have that anymore. I want to wear this and feel worthy. And I was like, fuck yeah, girl, I'm making that shirt right now. And I sent it to her. But that was one moment. Honestly, there are so many women I've met who are like me, child free by choice. A lot of them who have had to use IVF to get pregnant or other means. My best friends are lesbians and they used IVF to have their baby, who's the most beautiful, adorable thing and on the planet, and saying that as someone who's not a huge fan of kids. And I just wanted every one of them to feel like they should absolutely feel worthy regardless of what their story was getting there.
Yeah, I think back to my early 20s and there's so many stories that now I would openly share, but I held so much shame around them. So I think that's such a cool circular way that you came into what you do now, because I think we need more women realizing that, I mean, like even assault, like all these things or being stepped over or not being promoted or feeling different because you are two different ethnicities, like all these things are so relatable. And I think for so long we held them inside or we felt ashamed and we didn't want to talk about them. But it just makes us realize like we're so much more powerful together when we realize that everyone has experienced these things.
Or
has similar stories.
It makes me think so much of like how much we need to give each other more grace because we all have a story. I think it's so easy to like see someone from the outside or see from their successes or see the home that they own or whatever. And you're just like, yeah, they're killing it. And that they don't have a story. But I think, I don't want to say every single person has a story, but I think we all have stories. Like we're all creating stories that, and I think also not falling into like comparing your story too can be a thing, because I think sometimes we're like, well, I'm not biracial, so I can't make my story, is not that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like everyone's stories matter. It's just how we relate to the story. Mm-hmm. And I think we all have that, either the shame or the guilt or the heaviness or whatever that comes around the story. And we can't really compare our stories either.
Absolutely. You're 100% right. And I think a lot of that is you know, all of us pop out of a vagina and we're women. So which means society already has expectations of us and what our life is supposed to look like. And at the end of the day, whatever that experience is in the story that we all have leading up to this moment, let's say all three of us, right? They're all probably extremely different. But our brains are still building the same survival mechanisms and then regurgitating them in our patterns, regardless of what the story is.
Right? We're all held to the same programs, you know? I mean, as women especially, like there's so many age programs and, you know, worth programs and ethnicity programs and what's beautiful and all these things. So it's like, yes, we're all unique and we have our own stories, but we're all being subjected to those stories.
Yep.
Can you talk a little bit about the survival mechanisms that you were talking about and how they like play out in patterns in our life?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a lot of different ways that different people talk about them and give them names. And a lot of the women I work with, they're usually extremely self-aware. So all of us, I'm sure, have been to the retreats, done the workshops, read the books. So we probably have a lot of different names for them. Mm-hmm. Things like, you know, perfectionism and people pleaser and the performer and the overachiever and the overthinking and then this and attachment theories. And even your human design is a way that you can kind of give things labels. You know, I'm a Leo with a Virgo rising and a Cancer moon. That's going to tell one person a ton about who I am. Mm-hmm. Nature versus nurture obviously plays a role in that. Yeah. But there is a point where the pattern and knowing what to call it actually becomes a detriment. Mm. Mm. It's like going to the doctor and getting a diagnosis for something, but not actually having a treatment plan. Right? More information actually makes you think you're broken because you keep finding new words for it, but you don't actually get the resolve.
Ooh, talk about this more.
Yeah.
Sure. I know. I love this because like, I feel like, especially in the self-awareness personal development space, right? Like, especially if you are like a personal development junkie, you're like searching the internet, every book, every podcast, like how can I diagnose myself? And then you find this new label and then this new label and like, and then it just, the layers keep getting deeper. And I mean, we're just in this place of wanting to fix who we are, but at the same time, it can be detrimental. It could be very harming to constantly look for a diagnosis.
Yeah. And I would actually challenge that. I understand what you mean, but you say it gets deeper, like the hole you dig almost gets deeper. Yeah. But what you're doing though, is that you're still at status quo and you're building things on top of yourself. So you're almost burying yourself.
So it's burying instead of going deeper.
That's how I would feel.
Yeah.
Right. When I'm thinking about it, because you're not actually excavating anything.
Yeah.
You're just building more shit on top.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just
you're getting further away.
This
from
is what I have. Yes. Oh, no, it's this too.
You're
it's
just
this.
Carrying a whole bunch of shit before you can't see. And then you're toppling over. Right.
Yeah.
And that's the pattern I wanted to really stop with House of Worthship. And it was getting to the point where I was like, I was doing all the junky things. I'm reading all these books and I'm listening to the podcasts and I'm like, I have all these words and we love it. Right. There's a sense of relief that comes and this like shiny new thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it feels really good in the moment. And then a few days later, we're like, back to life. And then when that happens, the more that happens over and over and over again, you start feeling like a failure at self-development.
Mm.
You're like, I'm not getting it. Something's not clicking, but I've read all these books, but I've been to their retreat 3 times. And it's because when you finish, there's nowhere to land.
Right.
You have nowhere to go to practice what you've been learning. Mm-hmm. And so when I created this, I was like, okay, we can't just have workshops, because I actually do believe in variety. I believe in having options. We're not all the same, right? You're going to go to 15 different workshops and maybe 3 of them actually feel like they really vibe and resonate. Exactly. A lot of labels won't match, right? Some people are like human design. Okay. Right out the door. But if someone else might walk up and be like, oh my God, I feel seen for the first time ever because I have this language. But then what are you going to do with it? Right. As a coach, one-on-one work is, of course, you know, great. I have someone to like actually look at me and be like, let's break down your problems and let's make sure you have an action plan. And like, how are you going to keep yourself accountable? Oh, you weren't? Let's talk about why. That's great. Mm-hmm. But I wanted there to be a space where we could all come together, share the experience, share in the workshop, and have the foundation of a methodology that's going to point you in the direction of how you create action.
Yeah.
So that we're not in the stuckness of self-awareness.
Can you walk through that methodology?
Yes. So it's called the Worthy AF method because, you know, gotta harken back to my roots for the apparel brand because I love it. And it's based on a very simple 3-step loop. Notice, ask, act. Mm-hmm. And you can do it in big scenarios. You can do it in little tiny scenarios. Actually, the whole time we're talking right now, all 3 of us are running that loop. Mm-hmm. But so quickly, because we're probably so used to this kind of environment, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to do a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll give you a kind of visual of it that I like to use, which is imagine yourself in a room mm-hmm. and you are in the far corner and you can see the door on the other side of the room. And you can see there's light outside. You can kind of see, you almost see yourself out there. You're like, oh my gosh, I actually know exactly where I need to go. Mm-hmm. Okay. I just have to get to that door. Mm-hmm. But in the middle of the room is one of those big vortex carpets, right? The ones that are like optical illusions.
Yeah.
And you're like pulling down a black hole. And yeah. it's kind of weird, right? You're like, even in real life, I'm like, oh my God, like before I step on it, I have to like take a second to realize and tell your brain it's not real.
Yeah.
But in this scenario, you're in self-awareness corner. Right? You are stuck there and you think that vortex is real. You don't even realize the floor is underneath you. And you can see, you're like, I know that's me. That's my worthiest self. That's me over there waving back going, ah, I'm so fucking worthy. I'm living your best life right now. And you don't know how to get here. Mm. You do. The actions are available to you. You just have to remove the illusion of the rug. Mm. Right? So in the center is the ask. You're at notice, you're in self-awareness mode. You're like, yes, 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 I have all this information, labels, labels, labels. How do I get to action? Mm-hmm. The action is actually really small. People put a lot of pressure on themselves to make massive overhauls, but each little step you take over that rug mm-hmm. gets you closer to that person.
Yeah.
Mm. And how you get there is different for everyone in different situations, but that's kind of how I like to think.
Can you give an example of an ask?
Yes. Okay. I will use an example from my week because I'm going to tell you this. This is not a cure. Okay. I mean, it is long term, but it's a practice.
Yeah.
We always get better at it, but like my coach says, new level, new devil. And once you kind of unlock a new version of yourself, you're still at the base level. You still have more to go. And I love that about life. I think that's so cool. And then one day you'll probably unlock a door and open it up to somebody who reminds you of an ex from 20 years ago. And you're like, holy shit, I feel like I'm back to square one, right? But that's how you have to keep up the practice. So I take myself for a walk every week on days when I just can't fit in a whole workout. And just get out of the office, get a little sunshine, vitamin D. I'm very low in vitamin D. So I'm like, go, Liz, take a walk. And I remember distinctly getting buzzes on my watch and in my pocket. And I'm on my walk and I'm like, my immediate response is to stop in the middle of fucking sidewalk where there's probably people wanting to get by. Yeah. I could be in the middle of an intersection. Yeah. And that's like my instinct is to go, oh shit, people need me. Mm-hmm. People pleaser, right? Classic. And immediately stop everything I'm doing and answer everyone's stuff because like, oh, if I don't answer right away, what are they going to think of me? And I actually had the moment where I was like, Liz, is this going to serve you in this moment? What will change if you don't answer this? And if my people pleaser mind, right, my pattern was to say, oh my God, they're going to hate me. They're going to think I'm bad at my job. They're going to lose trust in me. They're going to get frustrated. Okay, hey, hold on a second. Is that true?
Yeah.
Is anything on here going to change in the next 20 to 30 minutes mm-hmm. if you don't answer it? If you were to walk away as your most worthy self right now, what would she do? So I put my phone on Do Not Disturb and I continued walking. And nothing happened except for me enjoying myself.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing. Mm. Walking yourself through those motions, and that gets faster the more you do it, but every situation is going to call for a little bit different thing.
Mm-hmm. And I love that example because I feel like a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah.
I've gone through that in different versions of my life as well. And I think, I don't know, what's your like cue to know that it's time for an ask? Like I was thinking like, mm-hmm. you know, for me in that situation, you're like, oh my God, the anxiety, the stories that I'm creating, that like my internal world starts to create some chaos. And I think that to me is my signal, but I'd be curious, like, what's yours? What's mine's, your like moment?
Yeah, mine's similar. And you're right. Everyone's is going to be a little different. And depending on the situation, it's different. And I think part of this is going back to how frequently we're doing it, how frequently we make noticing a part. Because self-awareness, it's so interesting. Mm-hmm. We think we're good at it.
But we're the worst
at it. But we're really not that good
at it. We're terrible at it.
So leading with curiosity with yourself, you know, if you take, I like to implore people to take moments when you're feeling great to notice, when you have the time, if you start to incorporate the questions into your life in moments before it's chaos, mm-hmm. it actually helps when you're in the chaos. Mm-hmm. but it's going to be a little bit different for everyone. So if I'm in the middle of an argument with my husband, let's say, not infrequent, I'm just kidding, love him. We can take a moment. I can take a moment to before I respond. Sometimes my nervous system, right, which is a little different than when your brain is creating thoughts. Your nervous system is built for fight, flight, fawn, whatever it is, right? And you're in middle of fight, let's say. And my heart's racing and my breathing is quick and I'm sweating a little bit and I'm like, I can feel the tension in my jaw. Mm. Jaw's a big one for me. We have to start the trigger. We have to know what our own trigger is. And then it slows us down. So slowing yourself down in the moments again to start your day, notice, mm-hmm. take a pause, notice, right, in the middle. Like sometimes we have to kind of incorporate those things on purpose, mm-hmm. and then they start to become more automatic.
Totally.
Yeah.
What about self-reflection too? Like I think about when I was in my early 20s, like especially with my brother, my family, I had like a very sharp tongue. And I remember specifically to this day, every detail, like where I was in this moment, I said something not very nice to my brother. And I remember in that moment thinking, ew, like I don't ever want to speak this way. This is not me, basically. It was like a light bulb moment. And I think it was a reflection of that then when I would get triggered again, because like he would trigger me all the time, I was able to be like, she knows, I was able to be, you know, more aware that these words are not going to do any good for the situation. And I was able to walk away. But I feel like I'm curious, like if that's a suggestion and part of it as well, like, or if it's easier to catch it in the moment.
Like sometimes, I mean, look, when you first start this, hindsight's 2020.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, all we're going to do in this is probably go back to every situation that went from when we were growing up and
yeah.
relive every second where we could have gone, oh, if I had just noticed before I said something,
yeah.
if I had just asked myself a question of like, is this necessary? Is this serving me? Yeah, sure. Right. Mm-hmm. And I wish that we all had the power to do that. Very unlikely. And you know what? That moment of reflection was mm-hmm. important for your next
for
steps,
sure.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes we have to try things on a little bit.
Yeah.
And I totally feel you. When I've bitten back at people, it feels so alien. Like I almost have to shower.
It's yeah, like, it's you so know it's gross. Not you. You have to you're just wash
like,
it off.
Yeah, I do. I really do. I don't like it at all. Like
yeah.
that is, it's just not what I'm like intentionally mean.
Yeah.
Instead mm-hmm. of like when you're trying to explain. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
It's different.
Yeah.
Right? Justifying, defending, like all of those things. They feel like you're impassioned by it. And you're like, mm-hmm. no, like. Understand me, mm-hmm. right? That's what you're saying, rather than like truly trying to hurt someone,
yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, I hate it.
I also, like, I'm thinking about, like, just, like, my own journey and stuff, and, like, something that really helped me, and I'd be curious what, like, your thoughts are on this, is, like, usually when I learn something, it's because, like, oh, I'm aware that I'm doing that. And one thing that I did is, like, well, in order for me to learn the opposite, I should just start doing the opposite. And that has kind of helped me kind of, like, because I think when you go to a workshop, you hear what lands. And I think it speaks to us. Like, you know, you have your workshops. Like, it speaks to us. And you're like, okay, clearly I want to work on this. Every time that comes up, you're like, okay, what's the opposite? What's the pause? Or where's the ask? Like, how can I show up differently when this comes up for me?
Mm-hmm.
Is another beautiful way to become aware of, like, your things. Because sometimes when you are triggered, you're not going to recognize it. But I think we all know, like, especially yeah. speaking to, like, a self-aware person, mm-hmm. they're aware of the thing and just... Yeah. I also think focusing on one thing at a time, sometimes when you're so self-aware and you're reading all the books, you're like, I'm going to work on every part of my life, health, business, relationships. I'm just going to tackle everything. Yeah. And you're like, no, work on one because that will also like impact and bleed into the others significantly.
Yep. And a lot of the time and part of what I love about working one-on-one and even in a small group is I can usually pick up on the thing that maybe needs the most work where I'm like,
yeah,
interesting. Maybe go back to that thing you just said. And they go, what do you mean? And I'm like, just curious. Like, tell me more about that. And then they're like, oh shit, you caught me. Because it usually all stems back to the same thing, right? Like mm-hmm. you've heard me say perfectionist, people pleaser. For me, that was a big thing. And it's informed peacemaker. I was always the one that could kind of be the fixer, the one that's reliable. And that's where like the precocious kid thing comes in. Yeah. And that's a lot of the women I meet, like you've been called precocious. You've been called the old soul or wise beyond your years, like those kind of things. And I think adults use that as a way to almost make you feel better about it. They're like, oh, you're just an old soul. My best friends, like I'm going to be 39 next month. And my best friends are 50, 55. I was best friends with a friend I grew up with, his mother, who's almost 80. Like I have older friends. I've always gravitated toward older people. And I bet you, if you go back to your history, you were a caretaker. You were the peacemaker, the fixer, the reliable one, the responsible one.
Yes.
Yes. Right. And usually you did not choose that.
No.
It happened to you. And I venture to say, it's something you actually love about yourself in some circumstances, but you don't want to have to be beholden to it.
I feel like our friendship healed a lot of that for both of us, because we are the ones that tend to like be the advice giver, the listener, the space holder. And I feel like we're able to give that to each other in our friendship, which is really nice.
Totally. And I think the key thing was learning to receive it, because I think in those roles, right, the caregiver, the fixer, whatever, it's so easy for us to take that space in relationship. And not that everything's 50-50, but if you're taking up, if you're leaning into that more, it takes the person in the other relationship outside of the ability to do that, because you're constantly doing that.
Yeah.
And I think the lesson, and I'd love to know what your lesson was, like mine was like, okay, I got to hold back. Like I don't have to jump in and fix things, or like, I don't have to be the person that's solving it, or like, oh, if she wants to do that for me, like, whoa, what? Like, I don't have to do that on my own. Like, I don't have to self-soothe over here. Like, I can let her in. Like, that's crazy, you know? And like, I think just learning that was like the thing that helped our relationship. But I had to learn how to listen to those parts. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we need to either, if what was the ask and how do I receive that ask?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the hardest part. When you're so comfortable in a specific role in a specific part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No,
what I was like agree. Your thing?
My thing.
Yeah.
Your thing. My thing. It is all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think for us, first of all, women naturally get given that role in a lot of scenarios. I was in Austin for my husband's birthday, and we were at a party at a friend's ranch outside the city. And the woman whose house it was, she has a new baby. He's like 9 months old. He was like this little meatball of a human. He was so funny and so cute. And she knows that my husband and I don't have kids. She knows that we don't want them, but we were around like a bunch of other dads and like guys that were also there. And she came over to me. And I think because I'm a woman, it feels safe. She was like, hey, will you just hold him for a little while? And I was like, sure. Right? Like, no problem. Because I was like, all right, well, I don't say
no.
No thanks. Not, I'm like, what if it drowns? Right? Like, I just don't want to be responsible for your baby. I'm just, you know what I mean? And I love her. She's amazing. I hope she doesn't listen to this just talking about it. But I was happy to take that on, because I said to myself, you know what? I am fucking responsible, and I am the caretaker, and I will crush this right now, and I will not drop this baby. And you know what? Looking at this pool of misfits, I would probably choose me too, right? Yeah. Like, there is something comfortable about a woman and the maternal qualities that you have and the trust that you automatically give other women, which is so interesting. And that's just part of the identity of women, I think a lot of us have.
So true.
It,
I love that you're bringing this up, because I just feel like it's an assumption that's made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm thinking like with my husband, there's been moments where he's like, I'm not touching their baby. Like, unless, and he'll say, no, thanks. I'll be like, honey, do you want to take the baby? Never.
I couldn't imagine being like, no.
And he says, no, thanks. He's like, I'm good. And I'm like, wow, like, okay, don't take the baby.
Yeah.
But he doesn't feel comfortable doing that. And so he didn't want to, said no, but it was so interesting how we are assumed that you can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it?
Assumptions.
Yeah. And normally I may have said no in a different circumstance, but she seemed very much like, please, I just need to go. And I'm like, you know what? That's fine. He was fine. He didn't cry. He just kind of like wobbled around. And I was like, this is okay. I'm sitting in the sun.
I feel like I can handle this.
Yeah, I can do meatball time. But, you know, there were definitely part of why I realized I didn't want kids is because so many people came up to me offering for me to hold their babies. And I was like, no, I'm going to kill it. Like, something's going to happen. Like, don't let me touch it. Like, I was not one of those girls. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to babysit, being around children. I also worked in restaurants in my 20s, and like having kids run around throwing things, I was like, get me out of here so quickly. And I just knew that about myself.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. But women in general, I think that's a lot of our assumptions and expectation.
Yeah. I mean, I know like in your story, you said you had a hard foundation. How does that show up now? Like, how did that lead you to House of Worship? Like, how does
excellent pronunciation.
Thank you. Like, how did that get you to where you are? Because I think, again, like, I think it's so easy, just speaking to what you're speaking to, like, we can live in these assumptions and live out these assumptions so easily, and we do. So, like, obviously you have identified that and then also worked on, like, navigating your own identity within that. So I'm curious, how'd you do it? How'd you get there?
How'd you do it? Magic pill. No. So I grew up in an angry household. Father has a short temper. My sister and he have very similar temperaments, and so they did not get along. My mother was peacemaker, but really just she was put in the middle a lot. Mm-hmm. And I was daddy's little girl. I don't know how it happened, but I was born with a calmer demeanor. I also was watching and observing everything and going, wait a second. I don't want to be screamed at. I don't want to be over there where all the craziness is happening. I'm just going to go stay over here. I'm going to keep quiet. I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to get all A's. I'm going to do the things that I'm supposed to do. And then I'm out of the line of fire. And so that's where that, and everyone realized that my dad would always kowtow to me, right? Mm-hmm. So I used to go like this. I was like, hi, he's wrapped around his little finger. And people would come to me and be like, hey, we need this from him. Will you go ask him? Sister would be like, go tell dad. He'll say yes to do. Yes to you, right? I'm like, all right. So I have to go manage this adult man, which became easy for me. But, you know, as the people pleaser, that was also like the other side of it where I was like, I got this, guys. But internally, my brain was telling me, oh, you need to manipulate. You need to keep quiet. You need to do all the good things. You need to perform well. You need to be sweet and pleasant to get what you need and to be safe. And so that carried through, I think, the rest of my life, right? Yeah. That created some unsafe moments for me in relationships that were patterns of being with men who are also angry, but I thought I could control and could not, where I was testing the waters. It definitely played in with how I showed up in school and needed to, you know, be perfect all the time. But really, I don't think I wanted to admit that I had learning processing issues in a different way. But my, you know, my mom is a special educator. My sister grew up with ADD and some other learning differences. And so all of their attention was on her. And I was like, oh no, I can get away with it. I don't want to tell anyone. But I was a slow reader. I had a hard time with, you know, book assignments and things like that. And so school, it was always easy enough, but it was almost surface level. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that I, as the peacemaker and as the one who people relied on, I actually loved giving advice. I liked being that person. It ended up becoming a part of who I am in a way that now I can see is part of what I love about myself.
Yeah.
But it's in these little moments where I'm volunteering for things and I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll take care of it. And I'm like, you don't have the bandwidth for this, Liz. You're going to burn out. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Why are you saying yes to everything? And so it's like still the little moments, even though I love that that's the person I became. And now I want to help other women realize that this can be absolutely something you love and accept and embrace without having it control every decision you're making.
I feel like you just answered that, but I'm trying to think of a different question because I think that specific era or character that you just put on where you're like accepting the parts of you that got you to where you are because you love them, but there is also these new parts of you that are being born that are kind of standing up for the parts of you that were the people pleaser, were the perfecting parts that are protecting almost those parts, but still loving that. So how does that feel to you, or how do you show up in your day-to-day life like that, where you can honor the parts of you that are so great at listening and fixing and caring, but also I have boundaries and
I can say no when I want to say no, and I can speak my truth and share my opinion and not worry about what you're going to say. Like, what does that look like to live that way? Or what does it feel like to you?
It goes back to this just being a constant practice and a journey, because you're not going to have this resolved. We don't live in that world. There are just some circumstances where my people pleaser and my performer are going to take center stage, right? That's new environments for me, people I don't know. That's kind of the default. I'm constantly doing the work to say, hey, do you need to be showing up that way, right? Is this serving me? If it's serving me, hell yeah, I'm leaning right in, right? Mm-hmm. But having the awareness to know that I can make the choice is different. And going back to your reflection, like, I am not perfect by any means.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, knowing that going into something and being able to reflect and say, how could I have done that differently? But I think it's also this understanding of empathy with myself and with others, because I will tell you, I've traveled to, I think, over 20 countries. I've lived several different places, and understanding that we are all human, especially our parents, changed my fucking life. Mm-hmm. Because you can be in the middle of a conversation with someone and you want to rip them a new asshole. Like, you are like, you are so fucking wrong right now. All I want to do is wait for you to stop talking so I can slap you in the mouth with what my answer is.
Yeah.
Yes. And I've gotten so much better at just knowing, I'm like, you know what? Have some grace. They did not come from my story. Mm-hmm. They don't know what I know. They haven't felt what I've felt. They've only had their experience. How is my anger, or how is my showing up like the worst version of me, going to change this? Mm-hmm. And it's not. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've become faster at doing that. And that's been a really helpful tool for me, is just having empathy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hear that.
I think this is so beautiful. That's the reason I share it. It's because, like, I think that's like the golden nugget that you're going to live in for life, you know? And it's like, I don't think, especially with someone that's healing parts of themselves that eventually they learned were bad, right? Like, you think about the perfectionist, you think about the word people pleaser. Like, there is some sense of like, well, I'm a people pleaser, so that's a bad title, you know? But they are also gifts in a way. And it sounds like you've integrated the gifts, but you're also honoring your truth and giving empathy for yourself. Like, that's life. That's where we want to live in, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, it's so funny. I used to call myself a doormat in relationship. I used to tell my friends, I'm just a doormat. I'm like, that is the, what am I doing? I was like, I labeled myself. I was like, oh God. And there, at some point, I think I just grew out of it, because you're right. There's a way to have both, but not everyone knows we have the choice.
Exactly.
And that's where that lives. It's just even knowing you have the choice shifts it, and honoring it. And I think when you were going back to the ask question, like, how do we know? Well, you got to sit with the awareness first. And sometimes that's just honoring it. Sometimes that's just acknowledging. Yep.
I'm being
a doormat. Thanks, little Liz. You protected me a lot.
Yeah.
You helped me survive a lot of things. I'm just going to let you feel good right now. Thanks for being there.
I love what I heard you say, and what you were saying was really loving the parts of you for all that they are. Sometimes I think about this in parts work, and I've shared this before, but if we treat our parts like they're this dark thing that's living in the corner, it's just going to get louder, you know, and we don't accept or fully love them for who they are. Mm-hmm. It's in the accepting and fully loving them where they can really integrate with the other parts. Mm-hmm. But again, when you're in personal development space, you're like, I'm hearing that these parts are bad, or like there's a negative connotation to them. And the more that we ignore the part, the more that we want to hide the part, throw the part away, and we're like, you're evil, you're ruining my life, the louder it's going to get, and it's just going to become this dark hole that takes over your life versus just learning to love it. And when you were talking about little Liz and just saying like, Liz, I love you, I hear you, thanks for coming up. Yeah. And that's how you get to integrate it.
Yeah. 100%. Like, she is me. We are they are us. Like, they just, little Liz and big Liz are the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love too, your reframing the concept of, maybe doormat's not the right word, but like, in saying that, it's also amicable. I'm an amicable person, which is a gift to have. So I think it's, you don't have to like say, I don't want to be those things anymore. I'm not those things. It's just restructuring them in your mind. So you realize that they're actually a gift, but then you can still set boundaries around those gifts so that you can show up as the worthy AF version that you deserve to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to point something out about boundaries, and I want to always give credit to Jen Noble, who's a fantastic relationship coach that we had in a few months ago. And boundaries is such an interesting concept because we usually think about them as walls, and she introduced them to us as bridges, which I thought was so beautiful. And even with your own self, right, with parts of yourself, you can have boundaries with a way back, mm-hmm. right? Just have a bridge. It can be a one-step bridge. It can be a really rickety, shitty old bridge that you think one step and you're going to fall right through the crack, but it's still there, right? And you can build it back and you can have access and you can take trips there and come back. Mm-hmm. And maybe the bridge gets shorter as time goes on, but we don't have to be so strict,
yeah,
and solidified in who we are. And I think there's also many of us one of you were talking about having to go the opposite way, right? You were talking about mm-hmm, going mm-hmm. to the other side, right? If you're thinking about yourself as like, oh, I'm this doormat. Okay. I don't like that part of myself anymore. I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to be yeah. a hell on wheels. Absolute.
It's very black and white.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't have to go down there, but I was like, see you next Tuesday. Yeah. But like, it's like you, I'm going to say no to everyone. I'm going to do everything I want. You
become, all about me.
Yes. You become yeah. this like selfish, self-involved person. Mm-hmm. And maybe that feels really vindicating in the moment. Mm-hmm. You spend a few years where you're like, I'm going to do everything. Mm. But then you're exhausted. Mm-hmm. And you usually find your way back again. Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that you shared that because boundaries comes up with like, this is it. Yep. But it's yeah. not.
No. Mm-hmm. Think of one person that you've mm-hmm. built a boundary that you really was like completely out of your life forever. And if that's the case, that's fine. It's a really long bridge.
Yeah,
really long. And they're going to have to claw their way back. And it's probably going to be your deathbed, right? Like they actually do that. But if there was a change to happen, mm-hmm. right, for yourself or for that person, mm-hmm. you'd still probably have a bit of a bridge, right? Like if there was trust that was completely deteriorated mm-hmm. or a boundary from an abusive relationship, right? You can absolutely have that. I'm not saying you can't build a wall. Do it. Everyone needs it. It's usually a glass wall, right? It's like there's still a part of you that if you put a hard wall up and try to forget a part of yourself, mm-hmm. the lesson goes with it.
Mm-hmm. I think what you're saying before too about how you recognized your parents as people, and that's true of any person that has wronged you in your life. And I feel that the people in my life that have wronged me have always come back to apologize or resolve, or even if it was years later, because I was able to get to that place of, oh, I have so much compassion for this person, even though they were abusive to me or they were unkind to me or I was a doormat to them. Like I can relate to that. I think it's, you know, I was able to have more compassion because the more that I put up these bridges, which I love that term, the more I was able to realize like they're just coming from their own suffering. Like they're projecting their own shit onto me. Mm-hmm. It's really not personal. Mm-hmm. It just feels that way in the moment when you're in the dance with them and you can find your own worth and still have compassion and forgiveness.
Yep. Absolutely. And I love that you said dance because that's how she talks about attachment theories and dances. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Everything you said, it's just a matter of figuring out how to both have compassion for yourself mm-hmm. and realize that your inner patterns, right? Your mm-hmm. little Liz, right? Your little Samantha, little Karina, all of us little ones together. We were attracted to that person based on the patterns that we also observed and needed to learn, mm-hmm. right? That was comfortable.
Yeah, we brought them in. Right. We attracted them.
Yeah. And then, right. But then like we go down the rabbit hole, like it was my fault. Mm. Well, to a certain degree, yes, everything in your life is your fault because we have choice. It doesn't feel like that in the moment. Mm-hmm. Right. Like we're attracted to who we're attracted to. But little Liz was attracted to a fucking nightmare. And I have to go back and go, what was that? And I go, you know what? I had fun in moments. There was passion. There was
learning.
Oh, there's always passion.
There's right? always. Those, there are, those are the passionate ones.
Was the passion worth it? And then you walk away and you go, but what did I learn from that? And would I ever go do that again? No.
No.
I would not. If you don't learn the lesson.
Yeah. It comes right back.
And then you go see someone like Jen and you're like, please help me with my attachment patterns. But she's amazing. You should, I'm going to plug her all day. But if you are in the self-help world and you are really into that, you start to look at yourself in that bird's eye view and the reflection mm-hmm. comes faster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I want to get ahead of it. So that you're not in the reflection state so much. You're like, okay, well, it's all well and good to be on your deathbed and go, I could have done this, right? How do we move forward with the worthy action, the worthy as fuck person, rather than looking back on her and saying, oh, well, I could have done that a little different.
So where do you start with someone who maybe is just becoming self-aware or just really wants to feel that inherent worth, but they don't know how to get there. They don't know even where to begin.
Yeah. A lot of the time, I'm sure you felt this, it's easier to hear from other people than it is from yourself, right? So if I say to you, oh my God, you're so beautiful, your skin is glowing, how could, and you're like, oh, have you seen this part of it? And I go, are you kidding me? Like what I would kill for your legs. Mm-hmm. You have the most gorgeous smile, all these things. And it's so hard. Take the compliment or to understand. And I really want people to sit in that moment mm-hmm. with me. And so when we're talking about, you know, they're speaking, they're going through their things. I'm like, okay, well, tell me more about this. Talk to me about that. And then we pick up on something. I don't want to let it go. Going back to the honoring and acknowledging, we need to sit with it. And we need to ask them some questions. Because it's not going to hit right away. And in the moment, even if it feels like, oh my gosh, I'm caught, they're still going to go back to their same shit over and over, right? Yeah. It's about repetition. Mm. So it's about repetition and accountability. And that's, again, you know, it's an icky word because I feel like accountability feels so like, you know, corporate, like on the wall with a kitten and like it's annoying, like it's weird in like the coffee room, the break room, right? But it's so true. And it's really hard to have accountability by yourself. Mm-hmm. Accountability buddies, it's a thing. You know, I work for Orange Theory in my day job, and there's a reason why we have a late cancellation fee, right? And there's a reason why the front desk is always saying your name when you walk in. And there's a reason why all those things, right? Is because when you have other people that are counting on you, it changes. Mm-hmm. When you become a mother, your children rely on you. You show up. Even if you don't show up for yourself, you do it for somebody else. Mm-hmm. So when you have a coach or you have a community mm-hmm. that's there, it builds that sense of safety. Mm-hmm. And it's totally okay to fuck up and not do it. But if you have a space that just is going to welcome you to be there and just say, well, when you're ready, you can do it. Like until then, let's see what's a smaller version of that. Because again, going back to the major overhaul, a lot of times we have these like delusions of grandeur, right? We're like, I'm gonna do everything. Mm. I'm gonna conquer it in a week and I'm gonna be fixed. No. Like, let's calm down. That's not how our brains
work.
4 years
later.
Right? It's one of those like montages.
Yeah.
And then they're sitting, they're like, you know. But it's about snacks. It's about like the little bite-sized things you can do and then having someone that's gonna go back and ask and truly give a fuck, honestly, from my experience.
I think we all know that. We did a market research for one of our programs before and they're like, God, if you can solve the accountability, like I just want this thing or I just want to work on this. I have this idea, but I need the accountability. I need the space. I need this. And I think we ultimately all want to work through the thing. But again, we just need the accountability. We need the space, the environment, the person that's going to just check in on us. And it really, really helps. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think sometimes on the other side of that misindependence, like I don't need anyone to keep me accountable, but it's actually easier when someone does because it's almost seamless. There's this ease to it. I think about like-minded a lot because going back to like-minded all the time, they check in on you, but it's not coming from a place of like,
did you do it yet?
Like you getting angry, like you some misindependent person might be thinking to themselves, like you haven't done this yet, blah, blah. They're just like super curious. And you're like, wow, this is, a loving accountability, and that's available through others. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes more than through ourselves, because we're a little bit harder on ourselves, mm-hmm. maybe a lot harder on ourselves than we are with others.
Yeah. And I think that's true. But, and there's also this, it is hard to be accountable for yourself. And that goes back to kind of habit building in totally. General.
Yeah.
And there's so many different things to your point about, you know, it has to be at the right time and the right trigger, and you have to have the right motivation, and you have to have all those things. And when you haven't done something, when you're alone, it's really easy to, again, blame yourself, say, I failed. Well, okay, well, I'll just start it on Monday again. Why even bother? And it's because we're making things too hard, not with the right cue, too big, not consistent enough. So our brains are wired for many, many things. But the first is for, it wants to do things, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Habits come with consistency. And when you don't do something, when you're meaning to, it's actually telling your brain you don't want to do it. So it makes it harder. So you're actually creating the same pattern that your brain is using to resist against you, which is bizarre. And it's also meant to conserve energy. So when we give it something that's way too big, it's on overdrive, and you're going to be exhausted in a matter of hours, right? If you're trying to overhaul your whole life, it's not going to work. So if you attach it to the right trigger, make it something small, meaningful, mm-hmm. and easy, manageable, mm-hmm. like what makes sense for your life.
So good.
Simple as that. You're cured. No.
You're done.
Yeah.
You did it.
It's a really beautiful summary, though. It kind of puts a bow on like everything that you've been talking about. And I really love this, like the how our brains just want to do things. Like they do. They want to work. And how do you not overload it? How do you meet yourself in it? And how do you not break down the pattern of overdoing it? But absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It works the opposite way too, though. If you give it too much rest and nothingness, it's going to want nothingness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you work with women to stop outsourcing their worth? Because I could give myself as an example. I used to ask everyone's opinion about things before I decided for myself. And that was like a big thing I worked on of like, what's my truth first? And then I can go and ask someone else if I still need mm-hmm. a second opinion, but really, yeah. How do you advise people to stop? Because you stopped outsourcing your worth.
Yeah. And I think I've had my moments. Mm-hmm. There are definitely people in my life who I still, you know, there's still that moment of I'm asking their permission, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. the pattern is deep. Mm-hmm. But it's not one moment. It's a constant, it's the continuous building of evidence. And when I'm working with women, it's more about the continuous questioning of for them to find the answer mm-hmm. when we're in the ask, for them to come to their own conclusion about themselves. The more we can do that together, the more small actions they can build toward the exit with the worthy as fuck version, right? It's just grows over time. Mm-hmm. It's not a switch.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
That we found yet.
Yes. We're working on it. It's a massive switch, but you have to build it.
Okay. So on this journey of being worthy AF, where in your life are you feeling called to be more fully expressed? This could be life, love, or business.
Oh, that's a really good question. Where am I feeling called to be more fully expressed? I think in this work, one thing I haven't talked about is my background is actually in acting. And I studied at NYU.
A Leo of you.
I know, right? It's terrible. and I mean... The way it relates to this is that I realized I was just doing character study, right? I was just studying human behavior and I really found it fascinating. But I do miss having audiences, which is why I do things like this. Mm-hmm. Not because I realize, not because like I want to be the center of it, but I really love shifting an audience perspective. Mm-hmm. That's what I love about theater. That's mm-hmm. what I love about watching something. Like, you're having a shared experience of something and you're shifting together. Mm-hmm. And everyone's having this moment. And I think for me, I miss that energy exchange. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm getting myself to in this next iteration.
Like wanting to go back to the stage?
Back to the stage, yeah.
I love that. When's the last time you performed?
Performed? Oh my gosh. Too many years ago. But I mean, I get my little mini stages when I do my, you know, my team workshops and, yeah. you know, speaking gigs and things like that. But the bigger, the better. I'm here for it. I'm ready.
I love theater. So
yay. And your son Foster is understudy, obviously.
Yeah. I worked in the film industry for 7 years while really? I lived in LA. So I'm like such a huge fan.
What did you do?
I did production. I started in production just as an assistant and then worked my way up to producing. And then actually did, influencer content. And then I was like, gross, I don't like this at all. So then I
was not aligned.
You were a voice.
I did voice acting too. I was like in some video games and stuff. Yeah, it was really fun. I just think for me personally, LA took a physical toll, as you know, I'm sure you know. It's like has its ups and downs. Yes. And I just felt like that chapter ended. But for a long time, I thought I wanted to be an actor. So I can relate to that.
Yeah, it's a bug.
Yeah, it's fun. I just love theater and performing. I just love storytelling. Mm-hmm. I think that's actually what I loved.
Yes.
And then realize there's many ways to storytell. Like right now.
Agreed. And yeah. that's 100% right. Yeah. How cool. We'll have to talk about that offline.
Yeah, yeah.
More things.
I love that though.
But yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Like, yeah, this is just like such a great conversation. And also just like the audience, I know it's gonna land so well.
I'm
so and glad. It landed with us too.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you guys before we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there somewhere you feel like you're going to now notice, ask, and act for yourselves towards your worthiest version? That comes to mind.
That's a great question.
I mean, it's interesting. I feel like I relate so much to your story, your childhood. I also now know your astrology. So in my head, I'm like, yes, I'm also 39. I was like, same north and south note. I hear it. But yeah, we're here to be empowered and leaders and heal our relationships. But I think I've been practicing that because I'm on a similar journey. I feel like I've been practicing that already all the time because I am a recovering yes person and a people pleaser and all the things. But I like that you put words to what's happening because now I don't think necessarily there's an area I will do that I haven't done it in, but I think I understand now the process that's happening so I can identify more clearly because I can sometimes get lost in the like, I don't know. And I think asking myself those questions would be really helpful in those moments.
Great.
Yeah.
I would say same. I mean, I feel like I've been practicing this for a very long time and I think my current edge and continues to be an edge would be in friendships. That's probably the place and something that I navigate so much. Like, is this an ask that I really want to ask? Is it worth the ask in that specific friendship or not, or just letting it go? Mm. So that's something that I have always, or I guess in the last like these few years, been like trying just to navigate with each person individually because every relationship is so different. You can't just like blanket say that this is going to be this way. Mm. But I think the more that I can show up worthy and in my truth and in integrity, the more that will become visible to me in friendship.
Yeah. Have you had to have the experience of just breaking up with a friend?
Yes. I wouldn't say that I've experienced. So like having an ask and showing up worthy AF, for example, in relationships where I felt like the relationship, like the person that was in friendship, like a really good friend of mine, for example, like someone that we would talk to like once a week, like we went into the depths. Like it wasn't just like a friend that I would meet for coffee and talk like kind of surface level, started to kind of ghost the relationship. And I was just like, what's going on? And so I asked what was going on and like the people pleaser in me would have been like, okay, well maybe some things are just weird. And they didn't want to, I wanted clarification. I would be like, what came up? Like what's going on here? Like, let's talk about it. Like, let's meet. It's not like you're just like another friend that I can just like easily let go and forget about. Like you're a friend that like,
I hold deeply, and I think you hold me deeply too. And in showing up where the AF, they did end up ghosting the conversation and never heard from them again after asking for more clarification. And I still stand by that. What I saw was I learned that they didn't have the capacity to like fully meet me in that conversation. And that's not the kind of friendship that I want. Mm-hmm. And so sharing that openly and like continuing to do that. I mean, I feel like that's been like this constant theme ever since then, is just constantly having this conversation and just asking for clarity. And then also just learning when not to ask. And this isn't a relationship that I need to lean in more, because they're not going to be able to meet me in that. Yeah. And being able to also like read more, like my capacity might be here and maybe I have responsibility, like they don't have the weight to carry the same capacity that I do, has also been really helpful in like deciding on that ask.
Because
I've realized the more that I grow and the more that I evolve and the greater capacity I do, I don't think everyone has the capacity to do that. And I think I got into this place of like assuming like, oh, you're in this work, so like you could totally handle it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they can, and yeah. I have to hold that, and vice versa. Maybe I can't handle it too in certain situations, but that's been the biggest one.
I feel like there's lots of people you think can handle hard conversations because they say they can handle hard conversations, but then they can't.
And then they can't, and they can't meet you in that, and or hold duality or don't have the same values and things like that. And I think all of that is represented through showing up worthy AF, using your language, and it's going to present itself. And I'd rather know than not know.
Yeah, but good for you for standing in that and not being willing to sacrifice your own bridge step, right? Like your boundary is, I'm going to ask for clarity. Mm-hmm. That's part of what you expect in relationships and you deserve.
Yeah.
So good for you both.
I liked the bridge analogy too. I do think also just came to me, like a bridge doesn't mean anyone has to cross back over it.
Nope.
Exactly. But it's just, it's a place to recognize like, oh, I was there and now I'm here and they're there and that's okay.
Right. And it's still connected to you.
Yeah. Well, it's a part of your story. So it's never going to not be a part of your story.
Yeah. I feel like as soon as you start defending or regretting or resenting parts of your story, they're really in the driver's seat.
For sure.
Yeah.
The more you talk about your story, the more you take your power back, which I think is what you're helping women do, which is so cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks. This has been so lovely.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. We're so grateful to have you on, and I can't wait to get this out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you loved today's episode and that it sparked something in yourself on your journey to becoming more fully expressed.
Don't forget to check the show notes for all the details and resources from today's conversation. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review.
We'd love to hear your thoughts and takeaways, as it really helps us to create better content that actually serves you.
This week, we invite you to show up even more as you, more honest, more real, more expressive in your life and business. And we'll see you on the next one.